At iFly Indoor Skydiving, everything's better when you fly together. This holiday season, share the dream of flight and make your celebrations unforgettable. For a very limited time, get 10 flights for over 50% off with iFly's Black Friday Friends and Family Package. Elevate your holiday festivities with magical memories for all ages. Go to iFlyWorld.com to grab your Black Friday Friends and Family deal. That's iFlyWorld.com.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With your host, Andrew Donaldson, this is Heard Tell.
Welcome back to Heard Tell. Okay, one of our favorites, Eric Garcia. He makes me sound like I know what I'm talking about when we talk about Congress, because he is the congressional guy for The Independent, a publication of some note and repute in the halls of power in Washington, D.C. Also plays a little guitar on the side. Wrote a book on autism. We'll talk about that some other time, though. Eric Garcia, how are you, sir?
Let's do this. How you doing, Andrew?
So meet the new Congress. Looks a lot like the old Congress. The House is within a seat or two. We still got one up in the air out in California. We're pretty much, after all the yelling, screaming, hollering, kicking and stomping of feet and gnashing of teeth, we're pretty much right back where we started, aren't we, as far as the House goes?
As far as the House goes, yeah. I mean, a lot of Democrats didn't, were kind of dragged down by Kamala Harris and a lot of the same headwinds that Democrats as a whole face. You saw some of the things. Democrats failed to flip seats in Arizona. They lost three. They lost two seats in Pennsylvania. They failed to knock off, an endangered incumbent Republican in Pennsylvania. They didn't get all the seats they wanted to win in California. They failed to flip a seat in Nebraska. So, and that really canceled out some of their victories in places like New York, and even some other seats in California that really could have made the difference that and would have allowed them to take back the House of Representatives.
So here's my question.
Go ahead.
Everybody seems to think that we're going to have this legislative onslaught from the Trump administration. My problem is I saw the exact same congressional leadership on the Republican side lose procedural votes, which that is, you can put some context on what an utter embarrassment is to lose a procedural vote. I think it happened like three times in the previous 10 years, and it happened three times in 2 weeks a couple months ago. I don't know that Trump wanting stuff ramrodded and a Senate leadership that has to establish themselves, are they really going to be that much better as far as just legislating, competent, pushing stuff through, doing their assignments with the exact same majority? Aren't we going to get about the exact same result?
We're gonna. I would do one more than you. I think that having that now that Dad's home, now that Trump's home, Trump could very easily, if Republicans want to have a procedural vote, to your point about the rules, the last time a rule vote tanked, I think, was a decade before Republicans took power. Nancy Pelosi never had a rule vote, but even John Boehner and Paul Ryan didn't have procedural votes failing. And this is why you're seeing Republicans now having to only do things under what's called a suspension of the rules, where they don't have to take things to committee, to the Rules Committee, and they don't have to have a vote on the rule. So then they only have two. So then that requires them to get 2/3 of the vote on anything so that they could get around that. And then even then, you see regularly votes on legislation that requires a suspension of the rule often fails on the floor. It failed this week. It failed this week once again, just for funsies. And I think that having Trump back also could very easily gum up the works if Republicans are being very careful and being very procedural and being very strategic, because then Trump could just like he did when he was president last time, very easily tweet out something and depending on who gets in his ear, and completely bulldoze whatever best laid plans there were.
The other thing that's happening right now is Trump is pulling some House members to his team, and these aren't nobodies. I know people are going to freak out over like the Matt Gaetz's of the world, but pulling like a Waltz out of Florida, these are votes that really, really matter. And when you have a slim majority, these things matter anymore. What's the feeling in Congress? Obviously, he was going to get a couple congressional people into the administration. This is a thin majority, and this sort of thing is going to matter when we go into failure theater fight here coming next week, and then we get into the new term coming in January.
Absolutely. You're going to see, I mean, the more that Trump picks off members of Congress, whether it be Lee Stefanik, who's in House leadership, or Michael Waltz, those thin margins on, matter when Republicans have, it looks like they're slated to have anywhere from like a 6 to 8 seat to 10 seat majority. And of course, you've got the Chaos Caucus. Of course, Matt Gaetz is not going to be in the House anymore. He resigned earlier this week. But you still have your Chip Roys, you still have your Eli Cranes, you still have folks like that. Bob Good's leaving, but you still have your Scott Perrys and your Paul Gosars. And that means that Speaker Mike Johnson is going to have to navigate those very thin margins that he had to navigate, and it means that. One guy who's going to be weirdly empowered is going to be his old buddy Hakeem Jeffries, House Minority Leader, hoped to be Speaker of the House, but that didn't turn out the way he wanted. So it means that he's going to, as much as Trump doesn't like, may not like it, it means that Johnson's going to have to rely on legislation that can pass if he gets Hakeem Jeffries' support and some of the Democrats.
I don't want to do a blow-by-blow of the leadership races, but there was one in the Republican leadership race that I think goes to one of those things that people like you have taught me about observing Congress, of how Congress actually works. Yeah. The Republican conference chair hearing was Lisa McClain versus Kat McCamick.
Yeah.
Kat Kamick, say that three times fast if you're a hillbilly. That one mattered for the reason why Kat Kamick lost. She, of course, has deep ties with Trump. She's a very Trumpian figure. MAGA loves her, all that stuff. People like Rand Paul, some real luminaries came out for her. Lisa McClain won because the appropriators all as one said, no, we want Lisa McClain. It was actually reported as the appropriators. They don't usually speak as one voice, but that's how it got leaked to folks like you. That was message sending, and that goes to something you've talked about a lot, and the people that actually cover Congress, because like, look, the appropriators run the show. They get what they want. And this is a good example of look at the headline, but understand how this happened. And that's a little dichotomy of how Congress actually works.
There's an old saying in Washington that there are three parties. There's Democrats, there's Republicans, and there's appropriators. And in this case, it's also important to remember that the appropriators were the people who sank Jim Jordan's bid for Speaker last year. These are folks who, at the end of the day, they have to write the budget, and they had to write something that could get out of committee with Democrats and then get through the Senate. So they are, for better or for worse, they see the MAGA folks, even though some of them are MAGA, even though some of them like Trump a lot, like Tom Cole really likes Trump, they really see these types of folks that are on TV all the time as children. I remember back in 2010, Jim Jordan was given an offer to be on appropriations chair. He turned it down and said, no, I want to be RS Republican Study Committee chairman. They don't regard the folks who are on TV all the time as serious people. So the fact that they really legitimately did what, I guess you could say got their person says everything. I mean, you could say the same thing over on Senate leadership as well. They didn't see Rick Scott as a serious person either.
Yeah, we'll get to the Senate in just a minute. While we're on the House, Speaker Johnson's going to return. It looks like they're going to do some kind of a rules package that ups the vacate the chair to probably double digits at least. Or yeah. I know 9 got floated as the compromise because they didn't want that double digit number for some odd reason, whatever. They're going to probably bump that up. So let's just assume he's at least safe until the first of the year. His two biggest things going on, besides just Trump blowing up everything with a grenade, we have shutdown failure theater on the budget in the lame duck session. That's got to be dealt with because guess what, folks? They're going to do a continuing resolution on an omnibus because they don't have any other choice. However, there's some stuff floating around out there that I'm having a hard time getting my head around. would they really push this to March right in the middle of the first 100 days? Are they really going to delay this? Is he really having that much trouble on procedural votes? He had another one last week that just failed that you just mentioned. Speaker Johnson's back. I don't know that he's got any more solid footing than he had previously.
He's basically on the same footing that he was last time. You know, he's probably getting on his knees and thanking the Lord that Trump picked Matt Gaetz. That's probably the one House defection he's probably happy about. And at the same time, you know, they really, to your point, they don't have an option to pass, you know, the 12 spending bills until March. That was what happened last time. But the difference is, in the past, conservatives kind of gave Mike Johnson a pass. They said, well, you know, he had to pass, you know, he had to do the CRs and continuing resolutions because of Kevin McCarthy. Now he can't really blame Kevin McCarthy. Come the beginning of the next Congress, he's gonna, this is on him. This is all Mike Johnson's theater, and the blame is going to go on him. And I think that's where, Ken Buck is gone, Matt Gaetz is gone, but you still got your Tim Burchetts, you still got your Nancy Maces, you still got your Eli Cranes, and that is going to be the really difficult thing. And then on top of that, remember, because of the Fiscal Responsibility Act, they still have to deal with a debt limit negotiation process as well. Then they also have to try to work to extend the Trump tax cuts by the end of next year.
Yeah, it's that's one of those looming things we've talked about on the show with a couple people. Those tax cuts, that's going to be a fight. How's that for irony? His two big bills from the first term and the second term may both be the same tax cut bill. Go think about that one. Let's go over to the Senate real quick.
Yeah.
John Tooney, probably a name a lot of people don't really know unless you're a hardcore politico. South Dakota, how would you describe his style? Because obviously he has to bridge the old guard to the Trumpism, because he's got to work for Trump in a Trump election like this. Is he 80% cocaine Mitch, 85%? They're close. He learned the ropes underneath him, so he's going to have that background, but he's also going to have to take a couple steps towards the MAGA folks to placate them. Give me kind of a ratio and a guideline as we start watching him put this thing together.
So to your point about it, John Thune, I've said for a long time, I think people underestimate him. You have to remember, in 2004, in 2002, he was a congressman. He ran against Tim Johnson, then the senator from South Dakota, who recently passed away, and he lost very narrowly. Then he kind of did an audacious thing. He ran against Senate Minority Leader Tom Daschle in 2004, and that was a wave year with Republicans, and he beat a sitting Senate Minority Leader. So, you know, now and former majority leader. So now he's taking that same spot. To your point, he very much is a McConnell boy. He's not like Cornyn, who actually used to be able to work with Democrats. Cornyn, of course, famously did the gun bill with Chris Murphy and Kyrsten Sinema. He has some relationships. Unlike McConnell, he's more willing to talk to the press than, because like people just wouldn't hold out their phones and ask McConnell questions when he would roam through the halls. That's power, if you ask me, where reporters just don't even bother talking. But I think that if you remember, in the beginning of 2021, when McThune basically said, I'm not going to object to the election results, Trump started floating Kristi Noem to run against him in the primary for 2022. Didn't happen. Kristi Noem got reelected, was probably going to be a running mate before she shot the dog. But John Thune is a much more avuncular. He's very much still in that McConnell mold, but he has shown some overtures to Trump. And I think he'll be much more comfortable with Trump than, I guess you could say, Mitch McConnell would. I think a big reason why McConnell stepped away was because he didn't want to deal with Trump again. He didn't want to deal with the headache. He is going to have to throw some bones. And I think that, you know, what I joked was John Thune, you know, on Wednesday, he didn't even get a few hours before Trump threw a grenade into the Senate when he announced Tulsi Gabbard and Matt Gaetz to be in his cabinet.
Yeah, and that's the big question on everybody's mind. Look, I'm not getting into the clickbait cabinet. I'll deal with the cabinet when they show up for confirmation hearings, because everything before that's conjecture. So we'll see who actually gets to a confirmation hearing and or a recess appointment. That's another bomb to throw. Where's he going to be on that? Because recess appointments have their place. Recessing appointment, appointing things like DOJ, recess appointing somebody like a Matt Gaetz, who's probably the most loved person in Congress, bipartisan across the board. Yeah. How far is Toon going to let himself be pushed? Because here's the problem. he's also got to establish some border boundaries for the Senate, because he plans on being a senator after Trump's gone, who, it, let's be fair, he's a lame duck president coming in, even though they're excited about
it.
What you start looking at the leadership team, we're going to talk about the policy changes for the policy committee here in a minute, because that's who runs the Senate. Where's his boundaries going to be? He's going to draw a line somewhere and push back on the Trump people. Gates is probably an easy one, but then what do you do with a Gabbard or a Hegseth for DOD? How far is he going to let Trump push him on these appointments? Because that's the first test, and it's a purposeful test.
That is very much the first test, and I think that he could very easily just keep on pro forma sessions. Of course, Trump has talked about just using the power enumerated in Article 2, Section 3 of the Constitution that allows him to basically adjourn Congress which would allow him to do these recess appointments. But, at some point, remember in 2020, Trump threatened this very thing during COVID, and McConnell basically said, no, we're not doing this. And that led to another clash with Trump and McConnell. I think that Thune might have to throw a bone to Trump here and there, maybe allow for a recess appointment. But you have to remember, technically, the Senate hasn't been in recess since 2006, because they do these things called pro forma sessions to prevent recess appointments. So it might lead to a clash where Thune and Trump just basically come to an impasse. And will Thune roll over in a way that McConnell didn't? Maybe.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is the story of the one who, as a maintenance specialist for a historic high-rise, knows that vintage charm historically needs constant attention. Which is why, when it's time to upgrade turn-of-the-century mechanicals, they turn to Grainger. With easy access to a million-plus products and the scale to deliver when and where you need them, the right tools and supplies are never far away. So the one can keep that vintage building running like new. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Let's talk about some of the Senate leadership team besides him. The Senate GOP Policy Committee is probably the most important committee in the United States government that nobody knows about and talks about in the normal press. Shelley Moore Capito is now in charge of that. Now, I'm a little West Virginia biased because she's a West Virginia senator. I had you on West Virginia radio about a month ago, and we were talking about how effective she is.
She is.
She's got a big stick now. She has bumped up, but she's probably not nationally known because Manchin sucked all the bandwidth when it came to Mountain State senators. But she's got a very powerful position now, and the number two underneath her is going to be Jim Lankford. And that's important because, remember, Lankford's the one that got trotted out and took the bullet in the head publicly over the border deal that was bipartisan. Everybody remembers that.
Yeah.
And he had some very pointed comments for his own party in that, public ones, on the record, kind of almost shocking ones, because he's not a bomb thrower kind of guy. And he was pissed. I mean, like, there's no two ways about it. Those two in leadership underneath Thune, that kind of, I think, is where you start looking for the direction of where the Senate might be going, because that kind of starts giving you some arrows. And a term that I've thrown and I've stolen from people like you, the houseification of the Senate, putting Scott down kind of pushed that off. This kind of a leadership team is why I feel a little more comfortable with that. What does it tell you that that's the leadership team going forward?
It tells you that the Senate is still going to be the saucer. You know, even though George Washington never said that the Senate is the saucer to cool things, that's just apocryphal. It says that the Senate Republican leadership is decidedly make no mistake, they're gonna you know, pass legislation that Trump wants. They support, you know, a lot of them supported Trump, a lot of them endorse Trump. But are they MAGA? Decidedly MAGA? Not really. You, I mean, make no mistake, you do have your folks like Tommy Tuberville. You do have your folks like, you know, I mean, you're like Josh Hawley and Mark Wayne Mullen and Eric Schmidt. But the fact that you got guys who were elected to the Senate before Trump became president, the first go around, people like Shelley Moore Capito, people like James Lankford, these are, you know, as you know, McConnell rules everything around me. He still is the guy in charge. All of these guys are McConnell proteges. Even someone like Steve Daines, McConnell picked to run the NRSC, who helped flip the Senate. He's a McConnell acolyte. These folks are still gonna are still running the show. People like Tom Cotton, also another guy who is who's still going to be very much in charge. This is I think their way of preventing some of the impulses and the chaos that you've seen in the House bleed into the Senate. The fact that they're picking these establishmentarians and these people who are very, very by the book.
There is it fair to say these are serious people? Not that they're not going to, you know, give they're the talking adults. Point, but they're serious people. They're not a Gates or a Bobbert or any of the silliness we see in the House. Here's another thing I think we need to keep in check as the Senate starts to deal with the lame duck Trump presidency. And again, this trifecta, folks, you got about 6 to 9 months and then this thing's going to bog down because the midterms are coming. The midterms for the Senate, all the senators have this in their mind because, again, third of the Senate's up every 2 years. As much as the map was very favorable to the Republicans this time, they were going to get the Senate as long as they had heartbeats running on the ticket, basically, or at least tie it. That's not going to be the case in 2026. Now, they're defending more seats than the Democrats are, and there's some really hot-button races coming up. Georgia's coming up. Tom Tillis, who's very quietly a very powerful senator, he's going to probably get Roy Cooper. That's going to be a knockdown drag-out in North Carolina. These are powerful positions. Susan Collins up, somebody who's a moderating force that you probably want to try to keep in the Senate. There's a lot of Senate races coming up, and when you're dealing with the Senate, one of the things I'm saying is, like, we got to think it. They're already thinking about what this Senate could look like 2 years from now. It's odd for the Senate to flip back and forth, but if this Trump stuff gets off the rails, those serious senators we're talking about in leadership, they've already looked at that calendar. They know they got some tough fights coming up. I think we need to go ahead and have that filter on what they're doing now, because they're thinking about it, even if we're not and the news media isn't thinking about it.
They're absolutely thinking about it. I mean, it was funny is that, like, we were talking to Tom Tillis about Tulsi Gabbard when Trump threw that grenade in the middle of the Senate floor and nominated Matt Gaetz. Look, Tom Tillis is on judiciary. Is he thinking about how he'll have to vote on Matt Gaetz? You bet he's thinking about how he's going to have to vote on Matt Gaetz. On top of that, you know, Susan Collins is going to have to is thinking about whether she's going to want to walk the plank on someone like a Pete Hegseth or Tulsi Gabbard. Remember, Susan Collins is said to be, again, to the point about appropriators, she's going to be the chairwoman of the Appropriations Committee. And she very much has to work with Democrats and write a budget. She can't afford to be a bomb thrower, though I think one thing a lot of people forget is that Collins has always been much more conservative than people realize because they confuse her with her old Senate colleague, Olympia Snow. But absolutely, they're going to have to think about it. Dan Sullivan is going to have to think about it in Alaska. You know, it's very easy. It's a real possibility that Mary Peltola, who looks like she's going to lose her Senate race, her House race in Alaska, could run against her. And if there's enough of a backlash against Trump, if the economy takes a downturn, if people don't like the tariffs, if they try to go too far on repealing Obamacare like they did last time, there very much could be a backlash. Now, as you said, they got North Carolina. You know, Republicans had to defend North Carolina. They're going to defend that tooth and nail, especially if Roy Cooper, who knows how to raise money, more money than the Vatican, they're going to try to put a bullseye on Susan Collins again if she runs for re-election, or if she does, then someone like Jared Golden is going to run. But even someone like Joni Ernst could be in some kind of trouble if the circumstances go the Democrats' way or turn against Republicans.
Yeah, and that's assuming Ernst doesn't go to the administration, which there's been some whispers about that. But that, again, if a, for a senator to leave the Senate to go to the cabinet, they're either looking to move up, like a Marco Rubio, who's still, I don't, is he even quite 50 yet, or early 50s at the latest?
Yeah.
He's still thinking he's going to run for president. I think that's probably the ticket in 2028. It'll be Vance Rubio. That's just my opinion. But that's what they're thinking, is if you're having a tough race, go to the cabinet and then readjust. So watch people like Joni Ernst. Okay, overall in Congress, looking forward, we talked about failure theater coming up for the budgeting stuff. First 100 days, Trump talks a lot about stuff like, I'm going to get rid of the DOE and stuff like this. We know he's not going to do that stuff. What do you expect? Because you're talking to us. So what is the House and the senators, what do they think the first biggest pushes are going to be? Is it going to be immigration? Is it going to be the tax cut? Are they going to try to do too much at once? What do they think is coming come January?
I think they're trying to do too much at once. And honestly, you know, there's talk, Axios has reported this, that they're thinking about using the Trump's proposed tariffs to pay for the Trump tax cuts. That is going to cause, you know, we'll wait for the Congressional Budget Office to score that. I'm sure that they're just going to say, no, that's not going to work. It's going to blow a huge hole in the deficit. You're going to probably, I mean, Speaker Mike Johnson, you know, kind of had a verbal flub right before the election where he said he wanted to repeal the CHIPS and Science Act. Trump says he wants to get rid of that as well. Good luck with that. But you're also going to probably try to see efforts to repeal the inflation, remove parts of the Inflation Reduction Act. But even then, a lot of Republicans from New York like a lot of the tax credits for renewable energy. So again, once again, it's going to be difficult. But yeah, one of the things that's very difficult, and I pointed this out to a friend of mine the other day, is that when Democrats tend to focus, when they win a majority, they tend to focus on one big thing and blow a lot of capital on it. And that's typically when they lose the majority in one house or the other. When Republicans get a trifecta, they tend to try to do too much at once. If you remember in 2005, the last time Republicans won the popular vote of the trifecta, they tried doing Social Security reform, and then Bush wanted to do Social Security reform, and he wanted to do immigration reform. He really was only able to do Social Security reform. That blew up in his face. And then in 2006, of course, Democrats take back the House and the Senate. So I think that there's Trump, he has a mandate. I don't want to diminish it, but it was only 2 points. And this House majority is fairly thin. The Senate Republican majority still has some folks who are going to be wobbly and who got to think about re-election next cycle. This is not going to be a durable coalition that Trump thinks he's going to be able to push through things.
Yeah, I think. Eric Garcia from The Independent joining us. I'm trying to think of a nice way to phrase this, but I'm kind of failing on a nice way to phrase this. But when we look to where this is probably going to go towards the midterms and after this particular set, look, Biden kind of messed up because he had a mandate to not be Trump, and he took that to mean I'm going to be FDR, and then went and spent all this money and did all this stuff. And everybody's like, well, why aren't you being thankful that I tried to be FDR? And everybody's like, well, because we didn't elect you to be FDR. So when we're talking about overreach, it's not just the legislation. It's overpromising and underdelivering, or at least it feels like you underdelivered. So you can deliver all the infrastructure projects you want, but if people are experiencing inflation and high prices at the grocery store, it doesn't matter that real wages went up. They feel pain. They're mad. They're going to throw the bombs out, right?
Yeah.
Is that going to be a messaging problem? Because you already mentioned it. One of the problems Johnson and Toon's going to have is they can set up whatever they want legislatively, and Trump can blow it up with a tweet, and then the whole news cycle is what Trump says. How much is this going to be a messaging-based Congress and a messaging-based administration for the next 6 to 9 months as they try to ramrod what they're going to get done before we get into the midterms? Because I think that's where the battle is really going to be won and lost. And they've already promised, I mean, the Republicans and Donald Trump, they've promised a whole lot of stuff. The overreach is also rhetorical, not just legislative, right?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the big things that Republicans ran on and they were actually effective on was on immigration and the border. But, you know, it's one thing to vote on a piece of legislation that Chip Roy puts together, you know, because he's angry and yelling on the floor. And it's there's another difference between, like, actually putting together a piece of immigration legislation that doesn't gore the oxes of, like, for example, the Republican farmers in Kansas. They're not going to like something like E-Verify. Even though Republicans made gains in places like the Rio Grande Valley, they can't necessarily use eminent domain to take take the property of farmers and ranchers. That's not going to work out too much. And then if you look at the amount of money that would have to be spent on a border wall, that's going to cause a big old hole in the deficit. So, you know, again, like even they could, you know, if Republicans were smart, they would do targeted legislation that would be something like, you know, using money for deportations to round up specifically convicted criminals. But the problem is that there is, I mean, and if you look at this, you look at who Trump has picked on for his immigration personnel, people like Tom Homan, people like Stephen Miller, they're gonna overreach, they're gonna overstep their boundaries, because even people who support mass deportations, they tend to think of, oh, we're gonna just deport the criminals, we're not gonna actually deport, you know, the person looking after their kids and the person who mops the floor of their bar. So again, you're going to see this also with something like healthcare. You know, Trump says he's not going to touch Social Security and Medicare, but he's also specifically avoided saying he's going to do anything with Medicaid. And, you know, if you touch Medicaid, which a lot of Medicare recipients are on, that's going to be an ox you got to gore, that you're going to gore. So again, there is so much potential to overstep the boundaries. And again, you saw the same thing with Biden this last time. You saw it with Trump when he tried to repeal Obamacare in 2017. You saw this with Barack Obama when he tried to pass healthcare in the middle of a recession. And that's when, you know, Democrats had that shellacking in 2010. So there is very much a potential for them to overstep their boundaries. Look at Bill Clinton, look at George W. Bush too.
Yeah. Before I let you go, Eric Garcia, the Independent, make sure you follow his stuff. We'll link to all of it. He's at the Independent. Also does some writing at MSNBC. Has a great book out on autism and working on another one that I'm looking forward to. I want to ask you this because I want you to put it in your own words, because I tell people this both publicly and privately all the time. Look, we've got the data now. These split ticket voters that show up and vote for president and then don't vote for anything else on the ballot. We've got the data on this election now. They overwhelmingly don't watch traditional news media, the people that do that. They are getting, I think the shift in news media consumption is people are only getting what they want to hear, and they've been doing it the same way. Pew had this data since 2016, so the Trump era. So for a decade, everybody's pretty much been in a rut in how they get their news, because they're getting exactly what they want, and they're getting it a la carte. So what I tell people is, you explain it better than I do, because I know it, and that's why I talk to you and others. When it comes to Congress, folks that do what you do, that's a small number of people. You tell me the number, 30, 40, 50, whatever. They're actually in the halls talking to the Congress people. The whole rest of the media is just picking up and grabbing it and repeating it. And I don't mean in a bad way. That's just how the system works. But everybody else is just repeating what your cadre of folks are doing in the halls of Congress. And people can follow them themselves and follow your outlets, and they can kind of cut through the noise and get to it that way. But instead of just railing against the media, just take a second and explain it. Like, hey, there's this group of people of 40, 50, however many, there's not that many people. They're actually in Congress reporting this stuff, and everybody else is just repeating it. Just explain how people actually get their congressional news, how that headline comes out, because there's no such thing as a leak. Like this Matt Gaetz report thing, that's not a leak. They told it to reporters, so the reporter would say, and said, just give people the behind the scenes on that, of how, look, it's really a small group of people that gets this information out.
It's, you know, it's a very, very small and limited group of people. You know, we all see each other. You know, I see them more than I see my coworkers in New York at the Indy. And also something to take into account. There are not that, I think this is the other point that I want to make, and I want to hammer home. There are not that many regional reporters in Washington anymore. You know, my mentor at the University of North Carolina was a guy by the name of Farrell Guillory, who was the Washington bureau chief at the News and Observer back in the day. There are some, you know, the News and Observer has somebody, you know, in Washington, but there aren't that many local regional papers that have somebody in the halls of Congress, in the halls of Kappa, in the halls of Washington, because there's just this feeling, with cutbacks and with private equity buying up local newspapers, that's the luxury item to have, when really it isn't. You know, like it used to be back in the day, you had someone who, you're a member of Congress, you're like local. You remember Congress had to account, be accountable and answer to local reporters from a report from a newspaper in New Jersey or a newspaper in Texas or a newspaper in Boise, Idaho. That doesn't exist anymore. And I think it's really bad for democracy, because then what happens is, like, is as you said, and this is not a knock to any of my colleagues, is that it kind of, you know, it's this Ouroboros where, like, or this game of telephone where, like, it starts with what reporters hear on the Hill, and then it goes back, and then it goes online, goes out again, and then it comes down to the local level. With the decline of local news, it's just a lot harder to get that. It's harder to create and establish that kind of DC to local kind of pipeline, and to really get the information.
Yep, and that's the void that people talk about. Well, the news only covers certain things. Well, that's the gap between the national and local media now. I think it'll start snapping back, but we'll talk about that some other time. Eric Garcia, a fantastic reporter. He also has a book out. Make sure you check that out. We'll put all the links on the Hertel Substack. Eric, thank you so much for the time, buddy. Appreciate your time.
Thanks very much for having me.
Thank you, sir.
All the music on Hertel is provided under a creative content license from MonsterCat.com.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is the story of the one who, as a maintenance specialist for a historic high-rise, knows that vintage charm historically needs constant attention. Which is why, when it's time to upgrade turn-of-the-century mechanicals, they turn to Grainger. With easy access to a million-plus products and the scale to deliver when and where you need them, the right tools and supplies are never far away. So the one can keep that vintage building running like new. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.